Well, here we go. We're back in the saddle. Sans Sean.
Yes.
Okay. What the fuck was that?
I don't know who you're crossing to me. I'm just trying to get back into the groove.
Okay, get into the groove. All right, well, yeah. We're back in the saddle. And sans Sean, where the hell is that guy?
I believe he's being held in a... Well, let him tell that story a little later on.
Okay, cool. There's a story?
Well, I believe so.
Nice.
Can't he wait. Has recorded something for us, though, so he'll be here in spirit once again.
Fantastically. Is it a Halloween spirit?
Yeah, I was going to say it actually probably ties in with our focus film that we'll discuss a little later on. You don't want to reveal that just yet, do
no,
you?
No, but of okay. course, this is the Halloween edition of the FakeShemp.net podcast.
First you want to kill me, now you want to kiss me. Blow.
Hey, you've got 3 seconds for it.
I'm going to amp this baby up, see how it sounds.
I like to dissect girls. Did you know I'm utterly insane?
And of course, my name is Glenn. I'm sitting here with
Jared.
And let's get kicking. It's been a long time since we've been on the mic.
It's been over a month, dude.
Yeah.
Over a month?
Yeah well over a month.
Mid-September or so, we recorded the last one.
Yeah. Feels weird.
Does.
Feels really weird. And I actually went an entire month without watching a single movie.
And that blew my mind.
blew my mind.
I was genuinely surprised. I told you that in the time since we last did our podcast, and you said the last film you watched was possibly Purple Rain, that I did some film trivia when I was in Brisbane, and I had a couple of Purple Rain questions, and I aced them.
Dude, it was meant to be.
I think it was meant to be. I own it on Blu-ray also. You can see that in this month's collection update.
Well, it was a much-needed break for me, so I took the family away on a cruise. We did the South Pacific, and it felt good not to watch movies for a while, man. Yeah. Like, I just absorbed the atmosphere, and the entertainment I consumed was more live music.
Very cool.
It was sweet. So, what I wanted to congratulate you on is there's been a fair bit of accolades for Gone Lesbo Gone over the last month. Yeah, so, well done, man.
Thanks, man. Yeah, it surprises me. I'm always surprised when it gets picked up to be screened at a festival. Like, I'm like, wow, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, heartbroken every time it isn't. And then when it picks up an award, I'm just flabbergasted.
Yeah,
like,
you're blown away.
What? Yeah.
Well, it's well deserved.
Thank you, sir. Well deserved. Appreciate it.
And,
it's about 30 minutes too long, according to some critics.
Yeah, well,
but we won't focus on that.
You cannot please everybody.
No, true. That's it.
Look, everyone that thinks it's a little too long should take that opportunity for a really good piss break.
Yeah, absolutely.
You've done them that gratitude.
Absolutely.
Of allowing them time to leave.
It's all I ask.
For a moment.
Absolutely.
You can take a shit. Like,
you don't even have to leave the cinema. Just bring a cup. Just bring a cup.
That's right.
You know, two guys, one cup.
Yes.
You know?
Well, that is the essence of Gone Lesbo Gone.
Literally is. You have to see it to believe it.
Yes.
And in the moment, we're negotiating a hot deal with the International Film Festival.
A hot deal,
yeah.
Steaming deal.
Yeah, I think so. More to come on that as that story progresses, because I think that will make for a very interesting story as to how this unfolds, because it could be like a current affair expose on people trying to sting independent filmmakers.
Right, so we're being serious right now. Like,
I think maybe I will. I'm gonna play it out and we'll see how it goes. Man, if it turned out that it actually was a genuine offer, that's something else. But yeah, it reeks scam. It reeks Prince Abu wants to deposit, you know, $200,000 into your account. But just give us $300 first.
Right. So, we're looking for the estate of Mr. Jared.
If it all goes well, though, the movie will be opening in AMC theaters across 570 locations in the United States.
Wow.
So it should be pretty good.
Oh, awesome.
So, yeah, more on that later.
Cool. Well, once again, congrats. But is there anything else you want to discuss? Have you got anything on your mind before we really get kicking?
To be honest, I have watched an awful lot of movies while you've been away. I've watched a lot of TV shows too, admittedly.
Yeah.
But I haven't been to the movies much. And just one film I wanted to quickly touch on before we go to the focus film was The Martian, because that's one film we've both seen recently.
Yep.
And I read your review. You dug it. Did you feel like a little bit that it was missing an element of kind of Ridley Scott's stamp on it, though, that it could have been really anyone else that directed this movie? Great movie.
Well, look, I must admit, I mentioned in my review that Ridley Scott is most comfortable doing sci-fi. I think that's quite evident, right? But what he does in this one is he injects a shitload of humor, which is usually missing from most of his sci-fi.
Yeah, true.
He kind of takes this one seriously, but it's very light at the same time. And I like that, though. I think
It's a good approach. It's a different approach.
It's almost like a Robinson Crusoe kind of story, right? So he's like, it's a survivalist story.
Yeah.
And if you're isolated like that, I guess humor would play a massive role, and he probably wouldn't have survived without the humor. So.
Maybe he was influenced by Zemeckis' Castaway to a degree with it as well, that sort of balance of humor about it.
Yeah, for sure. So, no, I didn't have any issues with it.
I enjoyed it.
Yeah.
The only things I probably would have changed would have been like, the Donald Glover character seemed like a pretty pivotal character to the story. The chap that came up with this, suddenly we could propel it this way and that. But he just sort of seemed miscast. He sort of just seemed like his character from Community. But aside from that, I thought
he felt like a character from a Roland Emmerich film.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, right? He nailed it totally. Yeah. He should have had the laptop out, hanging out with his Jewish father.
I get that, but it didn't particularly bother me, really.
No, I mean, and it's a small thing. Like, I came away having enjoyed that movie a hell of a lot more than I thought I would, and I thought Matt Damon was exceptional.
He was pretty exceptional.
One other thing that I don't know if you read today, and I didn't post on the fakeshem.net podcast, our Facebook page. And did you see Neil Blomkamp's currently now dropping out of Alien 5?
Really? Because, I didn't read that.
Yeah, because he's like, well, you know, Ridley's doing this Prometheus thing.
What's the point?
Not coming out till 2017, so the earliest we can start is like mid-2017. So I'm just going to go and kind of make some movies.
But is he dropping out, or is he just saying, I'm going to do something else and come back?
Yeah, it seemed like he was a bit heartbroken. I know that obviously he got into this thing by posting the images. What's that?
He was burnt by this. Because he got there first.
Well, absolutely. I think he reignited interest in the franchise again, too. And then Ridley Scott sort of like, well, you know what? I kind of want to keep doing this thing. And now the Martian's big. Fox are going to do what I want to do.
I copped a lot of criticism on Prometheus. Perhaps I want to make amends with some of the fans. You know, that could be a factor.
And there's the weird sort of things, too, where he said that the next Prometheus film before this whole Alien talk would be further removed from Alien. It would be something else completely. And then the talk of this Alien 5, now suddenly, no, I want to complete the Prometheus films and, you know, within this kind of Alien canon, and it's sort of like, it's very confusing, but regardless, look, I'm just excited to see any kind of Alien film. Same. I just wish us Neil Blomkamp.
Same.
And I think maybe, too, that the studio possibly got a cold feet after Chappie.
Maybe.
Didn't quite do what it should have at the box office.
To be honest with you, it's not. I don't think it's too bad a thing, because Neil Blomkamp's an original kind of director. So he'll come up with something that's not sort of, you know, building upon a foundation that's already existed. Anyway, but cool. What I wanted to discuss just really quickly is, I'm sure you read that Wes Anderson is interested in doing a horror film.
Yeah, this is cool.
How amazing could that be?
This is cool. Like, there was a skit that was done a number of years ago. It was either on SNL or Funny or Die, where it was Wes Anderson made a horror film.
Yeah.
And it was so fucking awesome. Like, I watched it and went, no, but that could work.
He could do it.
It was like, dear killer, please meet me at da 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 da.
You only have to watch any Wes Anderson film to know he could do it.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, look,
it would
be
a charming kind of horror
film. Absolutely. You look at Kubrick's Shining, and, you know, the use of composition, the use of colors, and all these things that seem vaguely familiar in Anderson's work, and you're like, he could do something like this.
Or even Tusk.
Yeah.
Like this.
Oh, God, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's the kind of thing I have in my mind that he would do. Because if you've seen Moonlight Kingdom, that's got a really dark second half to
absolutely,
it. You know?
Yeah.
You can see that he's got a flair for that. I reckon it would work.
And we want to see that more of that dark side, you know, beautifully stylized.
And
horror
is saturating, you know, the market at the moment. So we need something really new and different and quirky. And
I'm up for that.
I'm sold.
I'm up for that ride.
All right. Speaking of dark and quirky, let's move on to our focus film, which is Peter Jackson's 96.
The Frighteners.
There has been a destructive force unleashed on this town such as I have never seen.
Oh my God, I don't believe this is not happening.
We have got a poltergeist.
Okay, well, folks, I can do a clearance, but it's not going to be cheap. Although I do offer a 6-month guarantee.
That fellow takes us totally for granted.
Hey, Stuart, in or out, huh?
Frank Bannister had a remarkable ability.
Psychic investigator?
To communicate with the dead.
You can see spirits?
Emanations are normally confined to the cemetery.
You cannot
push spirits around.
Although they do escape.
And an uncanny knack.
We're going to scare the living daylights out of your parents.
For making a profit off the living.
We're supposed to be his business partners.
Everyone says that you're a fraud, but I've seen what you can do.
Given up, Frank. Death ain't no way to make a living.
But now, some things put the fear of death in the living.
What is happening to me?
And sent the dead.
Dad!
Running for their lives.
I've seen a figure in a cape.
That was the soul collector. When your number's up, that's it.
Frank, we got problems. All these murders that have been going on in Fairwater, they're gonna pin them on you.
From Universal Pictures and Robert Zemeckis.
You're next, pal.
And acclaimed director Peter Jackson.
We don't stop till the screaming starts, you dig?
The Frighteners.
Cool. So don't you love this movie?
I love this movie. I saw it theatrically when it came out. In fact, I saw it at the movies, and I took a mate along to see it, but he wanted us to go and see, I'm trying to think now, was it a Van Damme film?
Jesus Christ.
No. It was Our Last Man Standing with Bruce Willis, the Walter Hill movie.
Yeah.
He wanted to see it, and that came out the week before, and, you know, I was keen to see it, don't get me wrong, yeah. But I really wanted to see The Frighteners, and I used to be pretty good about talking my friends into things, like seeing particular movies instead. Yep. And yeah, we saw The Frighteners, and he walked out and he was like, that was awesome. He had his doubts, but he came out and he was like,
it is a kick-ass movie. Awesome. And even, you know, what, 20 years later?
Yeah, it's like next year will be its 20th anniversary. It's hard to believe.
It's up so fucking well. And the effects are great.
Well, I was going to say, the effects in the time were pioneering. This, for Weta, was probably their second or third film, their second theatrical film after Heavenly Creatures, but it broke ground, and as we discussed during the course of the movie, this really set the stage for Lord of the Rings of what was possible with digital effects and what he was capable of doing with directing and with visual effects in a film.
Yep. Well, look, of course, the trailer we just played kind of gives you a little bit of an idea with the synopsis of it, but it's essentially, it's a ghost film about a con man that's sort of a ghostbuster who uses the assistance of his ghost companions to, you know, hoodwink people and whatnot, and the spirit of a serial killer from years ago comes back to finish his bloody
rampage
across this small town. And it's small town America shot in New Zealand, and it is quirky
and it
as
looks good.
Shit. It's
like
fantastic.
You look at it, and it kind of looks like it could be set in somewhere like Castle Rock, Maine, or somewhere
definitely.
Like that.
It's got that Stephen King kind of atmosphere to it. And I guess some backstory to it is it was originally written as a Tales from the Crypt movie. I think possibly the second or third installment.
Right, okay, yeah.
And
yeah.
Robert Zemeckis, who produces Tales from the Crypt, he thought it was far too good for the franchise. So he said, let's do a standalone film. And,
totally.
And Peter Jackson, I think, was already in discussions for the Tales from the Crypt stuff.
Right.
And Universal gave them, you know, just complete final cut on it. And they went to town. They really went to town. It's so dark and sinister.
And it's richly layered. That's what we discussed. Yeah. Like, the fact that there is so many sort of subplots and layers of the film, it just tears away at them. And it manages to explore them all and have a satisfying ending. It's like, it is a pretty perfect film.
It really is.
Watching it tonight, watching the theatrical cut as opposed to the director's cut I watched last time, I think it's just short enough, just long enough. It just kind of, it never, ever really
doesn't
hits
drag.
A dull moment.
Drag,
no, no, it's fairly consistent from beginning to finish, which is tough sometimes with Jackson's latter stuff,
correct.
Obviously.
And as I mentioned to you, it also, you know, most films have three acts. This one feels like two acts because it kind of just changes gear at one point.
Absolutely.
It goes from being a quirky comedy horror to just a full-on balls-to-the-wall scare fest.
No doubt. Yeah, that sinister turn it takes in the last 30-odd minutes of the movie. Mm. Some really gripping and suspense-driven cinema.
So it stars Michael J. Fox in possibly his first performance since being diagnosed with Parkinson's, which, as you mentioned, you can kind of see some of the frailty.
Absolutely.
Scene, you know, coming through.
His movements are a little exaggerated as if to sort of cover, and even his facial expressions at times are somewhat more animated.
Sure. Interesting story about Michael J. Fox with this one. I read some years ago through an interview, it wasn't Fangoria, it could have been Empire or someone like that.
Right.
That Michael J. Fox has a huge resentment towards this film. He actually hates it.
Really?
Yeah, because I think it was because at the time he'd had this diagnosis.
Okay.
He was away from his family for so long.
Right.
He didn't like New Zealand at all.
Yeah.
Climate and all that, which is interesting because he comes from Vancouver, which has the same kind of climate.
Totally.
But yeah, he I don't know if he still feels that way about it now, but it was a flop at the time. time at the box office.
It was a box office.
And I think he was just really, really burnt by it.
Right.
No, and yeah, so.
And I did read that he'd injured himself during the production.
Right.
I don't know if he fractured his leg or broke his leg. And I think Peter Jackson, and this is actually covered in a documentary that's on the Blu-ray and was on the previous DVD. It's like a 3.5 hour doco behind the scenes of the movie. And it was that extra time that he had when his leg was injured. Jackson pretty much was reworking parts of the film, but had Michael J. Fox actually learn his dialogue. And I dare say, because apparently he did rock up to set quite a few times, not knowing the lines and things like that, as to whether obviously he had other things looming over his head, like missing his family and his diagnosis.
Yeah,
so
he probably wasn't in the right frame of mind during the whole production.
And he's great at it, though. That's the beauty of it, because I think those things work well. Yeah, absolutely. It's the darkest thing he's done, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think it's also... How do you rank this in terms of Peter Jackson films?
This is my favourite Peter Jackson film, I will honestly say.
I would say it's in my top
three. I thought
about
that today. Yeah,
same.
It's my favourite.
It's probably my top three. I think for me, more emotional attachment would be Brain Dead, followed by Heavenly Creatures, just because they're two films that really influenced me at an early age.
That's understandable.
Yeah, but Frighteners is right there.
Yeah, yeah, this is number one, and I think probably for me, Brain Dead and then Heavenly Creatures, so it's just a slightly different order.
And being such a huge Reanimator fan, I love Jeffrey Combs, and
so
he is phenomenal in this.
Absolutely.
And I said to you earlier that I think outside of Reanimator, this is his best performance. But I actually quite often think about whether this is as good or if not better than his Herbert West character. And that's up for debate. But
And he has so much room to play with this film because he can be animated and a bit of a caricature because the film plays out that way.
Yeah.
And just his mannerisms are great.
Yeah.
You know, his delivery. Yeah, he's fantastic. I even saw you quoting one of the bits. It's the only time I've seen you do that during a film. But there was that one line when he rips his shirt open and you sort of said that passage of dialogue at the time.
Was it my body?
Yes.
Oh, was it my, not my body's a temple.
Don't worry, we can dub that in post.
No, but when you're in that, when you're watching the movie, it comes to you. You just know what's going to
say. Absolutely.
No, it's a movie that got a lot of playback back in my teenage years.
Absolutely. I was going to mention too the genre luminaries that are in it, because aside from Jeffrey Combs, you've got John Astin.
John Astin, whose son is Sean Astin, that was in Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings.
Of course. And Dee Wallace.
Dee Wallace is amazing in it.
So Ali Emery, maybe after this he did a genre film, Texas, but prior to that he was just doing military strongman roles, which he plays in this.
Yep.
But brilliantly so.
Yeah, who else? I wouldn't know his name, but the guy that plays the athletic husband. He's from Forrest Gump. He played Elvis in that. So there's a lot of alumni, from Zemeckis's.
Well, we mentioned... Danny Elfman, who did the score as well, having done the score for Tales from the Dark Side, Tales from the Crypt.
Tales from the Crypt, and it's got Tales from the Crypt elements to the score as well as
Beetlejuice.
You mentioned Beetlejuice, which
absolutely.
And it's so rich, and a lot of these things I never picked up on.
Watching
it on Blu-ray is amazing.
It looks incredible. Like, they
really
went to town on it.
I picked up on a lot of little things that, just I never really considered because of the definition.
The quality of the picture. Just wanted to mention too, during the closing credits of the film is the Mutton Birds covering Blue Oyster Cult's Don't Fear the Reaper. And when the movie came out, saw the movie, loved the movie, saw the video a bunch of times Friday night in Rage, picked up the CD single from HMV for about $4.95.
Yeah.
And it's just a bold decision because, obviously, as you said, that they had some complete control over it.
Yep.
To put a New Zealand band on an international film covering Blue Oyster Cult, it's sort of like, wow, that's ballsy.
It is.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool. Great ripping cover too. I love this song. Nothing's going to beat Blue Oyster Cult's version, but this is a pretty damn good cover.
The director having his final laugh, really.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. No, totally.
Cool. So the Blu-ray and the previous DVD release come with an amazing behind-the-scenes documentary, which is well worth a look.
Very intensive.
This is before the days of DVD, back in Laserdisc days, that Peter Jackson was just documenting everything because he knew it would come in handy.
Yeah, and that's the thing. He was a big aficionado for special features on Laserdisc, so he's a fanboy from back in the day, just like us.
Yeah.
He won that next level.
Like Laserdisc took off in a global way.
No,
it was very niche,
totally collector's sort of thing. Absolutely.
But he's still bothered with it.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Incredible.
Cool. Well, have we milked that one?
I reckon that we've probably exhausted it beyond any kind.
We chose it as a perfect Halloween film.
Yeah,
it is almost family friendly. It's very dark, so make sure if you watch it with your kids, you know what kind of film it is.
Yeah.
But definitely, if they're sort of the young teenage age and up, it's just the perfect family film in
absolutely.
That regard. So.
And what a ripping soundtrack!
Yeah.
We listened to the Blu-ray, and the bass was pumping. It was hitting high notes, and the Elfman score. Spine tingling.
The rumble
very
was
cool.
Awesome. So.
Very cool.
Cool. Well, let's move on. We've got some giveaways, so let's do that.
Awesome.
You know, it's Halloween. I guess everyone's entitled to one good scare, huh?
All right, let's give shit away. I'm excited about this one.
Yeah, well, you know, we haven't done a giveaway since, what? We didn't do a giveaway on the last episode.
No, the last couple, I think, we haven't. But we have got some great titles here from our friends at Eagle Entertainment.
Thank you, Eagle.
I'm very excited about these. One of them is a new release of theirs. The other one is one of my favorite releases of theirs.
Sweet.
So we've got Autumn Blood, which is a fantastic new release that they've done with Peter Stormare. And it's about two kids in a wilderness being chased by some bad guys.
Looks really good. I haven't watched it. You did a review for this one on the FakeShift.net website.
Yeah, so check out the website and you can see what I thought of it. But also Essential Killing, which we have given away once before, but I've got another copy with Vincent Gallo. The reason we've chosen these films is they're both survivalist films, both minimalist films. So there's not a lot of dialogue. It's just really, really intense action.
And there's no blowjobs in them.
No blowjobs.
No. Sorry, Chloe.
Yes.
Sorry.
You'll have to Google that one.
You know you can buy Vincent Gallo's tuxedo that he wore to the Cannes premiere of... And he's selling it on his website for $2,100.
No. Did you know that he's selling on his website his body for sex?
Really?
Yep.
How much does he charge us for that?
It's $1 million.
Oh, God. That's an awful lot of money.
Yeah.
We'll just buy the tuxedo, thanks.
That's right.
Probably get some sex in that tuxedo. Do you know Vincent Gallo once wore this at Cannes back in the early 2000s?
The pants are still stained.
Yeah, exactly.
Hello, Chloe.
So anyway, if you want to win a copy of Autumn Blood and Essential Killing plus a FakeShimp.net t-shirt.
Holy, what?
I know, what the hell?
You just threw that in there? Nice.
No, I thought about it. Cool. So all you have to do is you email us at glenn@fakeshimp.net. And all you have to do is email us with your essential survival checklist.
That's cool. I like that.
So also include your shirt size.
Yeah, that'll be handy.
And we will announce the winners on the next episode. That's how we're going to play this one. So giveaways, Autumn Blood, Essential Killing, phenomenal films.
Yeah, and the t-shirt that's probably valued at $2,100 on Vincent Gallo's site. But tonight it's free in the competition if you win.
That's right. And if you pay $1 million, we'll throw Vincent Gallo in.
Absolutely. But we get to record it.
Don't you blame the movies. Movies don't create psychos. Movies make psychos more creative.
And it's that time again for Guilty Pleasures.
Guilty Pleasures.
And we're going to throw to Mr. Sean Crawford. He's got the first Guilty Pleasure off the rank. So take it away, Sean.
Hello, this is Sean. I can't make it again. I'm so sorry. However, I am where you'd rather be. That's not exactly true either. I'd rather be where you guys are in the Fake Shame Studios. However, this week's Guilty Pleasure is a little film from 1998 called Firestorm. It was directed by Dean Semler. Yes, that Dean Semler, the Australian cinematographer, the Oscar-winning cinematographer from Dances with Wolves. He turned his hand to directing in 1998 and he came up with this film. And it is, well, it's awful. It stars ex-football star, ex-gridiron star, Howie Long as a smoke jumper. These guys are firefighters that parachute into the middle of blazes that are too big and too extreme for regular firefighters. These guys are the elite of the elite. They're all built like brick shit houses and really grizzled, like Scott Glenn, who's also in the film, which is coincidental. It stars William Forsythe as a bank robber who sets fire to a forest so that he can escape from prison. And he's got Barry Pepper, who was nobody at the time, tagging along with him. And as they try and make their way out of this fire, it becomes too big, so they have to call in the smoke jumpers. Howie Long and his bunch of friends come in. They bump into Susie Amis, who is a wildlife photographer. I don't know why she's taking photographs. It never really goes into it. I don't think it's important, to be honest. And when they discover the dastardly plot of the bad guys, they have to fight their way out of these firestorm scenes. That's about it. It's paper thin, to say the least. It is, however, in my opinion, a whole heap of nonsense fun. It's the kind of one that I watch over and over and over again. It's directed by Dean Semler, as I say. He went on to direct another film, just one more film, which starred Steven Seagal. Yes. He has a habit of picking really awful films. It's probably why he went back to cinematography. The film was originally supposed to star Sylvester Stallone, and then the budget bottomed out from the production company and it became a big disaster, and it was picked up on turnaround by 20th Century Fox, who cut the budget drastically, gave it a $19-20 million budget, to which it didn't even make that back at the box office. It has some of the worst reviews you could possibly wish to receive for your film. However, what keeps me watching is the fire scenes, which are, well, to be fairly honest, they're pretty good. Even if the rest of it is completely hokum. But anyway, that's it from me. I have to bounce now. I have to go back. I'm not away with the family for a weekend. I am actually in ex-Soviet Russia with Steven Seagal, taking over some ex-KGB agents who are going to threaten to blow the place up with a nuclear bomb. However, I hopefully will be returning next week. I do hope to hear you guys then. Enjoy Firestorm and say hello to everybody. Take care. Bye-bye.
What the fuck was that?
That doesn't constitute a Halloween special. Sean, might be a horror of a movie. I haven't seen it myself.
That was a great review, but that's not Halloween.
He missed the memo.
Oh,
you missed the memo. You're fucking fired. Sorry, Sean, you're not.
You know, we love you.
We'll just make you sell your body for $1,000 so we can put it into the fakeshemp.net website.
Mm.
But that's cool.
That's cool. But thank you for that. It's good to have him here in spirit.
Absolutely.
And that film kind of is a thriller, so I guess, you know,
yeah,
stretch borderline. The definition.
Yeah, absolutely.
There.
It's got some fire in it, so, you know. I don't know.
All right. Well, do you want to go next?
Okay, look, I'm going to read this off the sheet because I've made some rather extensive notes in regards to my guilty pleasure.
Is this going to be boring?
No, you're going to fucking love it, man. Right. Cool. In fact, this is a film that I wanted to cover for some time. It is a 1986 film named Spookies.
Spookies?
Spookies.
Holy shit, I remember this one.
I was going to say, holy shit, that's my guilty pleasure.
No, I don't remember seeing it, but I remember seeing it in a
video
store.
Video artwork was amazing.
Yeah, well, go ahead and tell us about it.
Okay, so the basic premise of the film is a motley crew of friends stop at a seemingly abandoned mansion where they fall prey to a geriatric with a Ouija board. Whose sole desire is to resurrect his young wife. And I mean young. She's in her early 20s. He looks like he's in his fucking 80s or 90s.
Yuck.
Throw in an array of monsters, some memorable practical effects, odd sound design choices, convoluted plotting, and you have the 1986 gem, Spookies. Spookies had an enigmatic... I'm going to cough. Film from my childhood. I'm doing too many voices. And it's draining my
throat.
Too
many voices.
You know, Spookies, guilty pleasure.
That's the same voice.
Yeah, well, you know, in my mind it's different. Yeah, it was a bit of this sort of mysterious film of my childhood because it was unconventional in its structure and you couldn't really find anything regarding its production history.
Yep.
Not really documented or referenced in any film or horror movie text until the age of the internet. And its production history is like a forlorn tale that's both tragic and tawdry. Well, at least for the two filmmakers that were in the core of the making of this film. Because the film, before it was Spookies, it was a film called Twisted Souls, and it was about 90% done. They were fired off the film by the producer. They brought in a young editor, this editor that had worked on a handful of things. She basically said about 50% of this film's usable,
yep.
The other 50%'s not. So I'll just direct the other 50%.
Right.
So they pulled money into it. And she came from a background of working in porn, not like in front of the camera, but behind the camera.
Okay.
So they shot another 50% of the movie that doesn't really fit with the movie at all. It's like suddenly there's another story going on entirely and it doesn't really work at all. There's a really excellent article that's been published online last year called The Strange Saga of Spookies by Max Every, and it's on the Dissolve website. It interviews key parties that are involved in the making of Spookies as well as Twisted Souls.
Yep.
And it gets a bit fiery because the two guys behind Twisted Souls really still aren't happy about how this all went down over 30 years ago because that was in 84 and by the time the film was released, it was 86.
Get over it.
So, yeah, look, I'm not going to go into it. I got a bit of a writing there about it, but the footage from Twisted Souls and the new footage from Spookies doesn't really blend well narratively nor technically, and that's what makes Spookies so uniquely Spookies. In fact, one of the plot lines involves a young boy named Billy that occupies roughly 5 to 7 minutes screen time and has no bearing on the overall story, sticks out like a sore thumb, and was part of the newly shot footage. So it's like, why the fuck did you bother? You just added this extra scene that has no bearing on the overall film. But anyway, the best thing about this movie is the monsters. You've got the leader of the pack, the geriatric, who's an occult wizard of sorts, a shape-shifting cat man, maybe like a werewolf-type cat man, a grim reaper, zombies, a Chinese spider woman, and best of all, pick-wielding muckmen with excessive flatulence who are prone to melting when splashed with red wine. Spookies has all of this and more. What it's missing, though, is a cohesive story, empathetic characters, and any genuine sense of suspense. All that constitutes, and all this, that's what constitutes a guilty pleasure for me of this film. And I want to mention too that the Aussie home video art for this, the old Pals video art, was so good. But I think it was actually exclusive to the Australian market. It was probably done by an Australian illustrator. Right. Sadly, now that artwork's lost to just pretty much the VHS collecting community.
Sounds like a festering bowl of dark snot.
Definitely worth checking out. But it's hard to get a hold of because it's caught up in rights haggles too. It's about only places available on DVDs Germany where everything's available.
Yeah, that's right.
But nothing's legally licensed.
So what title is the more apt title for this?
It has to be Spookies because as far as Twisted Souls is concerned, there's only about 45% to 50% of the movie.
What year was this?
1986 is
officially
Spookies.
So this was around a time when there were all these movies with similar titles. So you had Munchies, you had
Spookies,
totally,
yes, you
had Willies,
yes,
you had
Ghoulies, yes, this was exactly that.
It was the and era
in fact,
of the ease.
The producer said, I want the title to be like Goonies.
Oh, right.
It was like Spookies. So, I mean,
Goonie Gaga.
Spookies? Yeah. There's no way you're going to think there's any real suspense in this film. But yeah, look, it's just fun because the creature effects and the fact it was all practical effects. Although I might mention all the practical effects from the Twisted Soul stuff is fucking awesome. And two of the guys that worked on those practical effects have gone on and done a bunch of great horror movies over the years. Whereas the stuff that was shot for the latter Spookies, fucking shit.
Right.
Like the worst.
Oh, they've all
absolutely
got to start somewhere.
Totally. But Spookies, that's my guilty pleasure. So now, what is yours?
Mine comes from 1989. It stars Andrew Stevens and George Kennedy, and it's called The Terror Within.
Terror Within.
Now,
yeah,
this was produced by Roger Corman.
Yeah.
And look, it's set in a post-apocalyptic sci-fi sort of horror universe with big monster puppets and super cheesy gore. And it's following a chemical disaster where survivors are living in this sort of underground bunker, a medical bunker.
Okay.
When they invite one girl, or they save one girl from the outside world, bring her in, and she gives birth to this mutant, right? Massive mutant, and all of a sudden that mutant spawns all of these rubbery puppets and and it becomes a monster film, and it's clearly a ripoff of The Thing and Alien, right?
And this is 89, so this is a number of years after either of those movies.
Yeah, but that's what it's cashing in on.
Right.
I think they're probably
Corman's
thinking,
late to the party again.
No, I think he's thinking there's enough time that I can get away with this.
This is legitimately something new.
Yeah, well, that's
no one fucks one of the alien babies, do they? Like in Splice.
Oh, shit, no. I think that was a first for cinema.
That was unbelievably uncomfortable.
Yeah, that was the reason he made that film, was for that scene.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, it was worth
it's
it because that's
commentary.
One of those memorable scenes. Fucking great, great movie.
So anyway, I don't have a lot to add to it. It's an obviously a ripoff of those things, but
it's
a movie that I had a poster on my wall alongside Freddy Krueger and Chucky. I had the Terror Within in the middle, and then I had Frighteners elsewhere.
Cool.
But the cover was great. It's this giant
claw. So good,
Coming out of like almost similar to The Gate. Like it's sort of, you know, this image coming out of the cover.
Yeah.
And look, this film obviously performed well enough to warrant a sequel because The Terror Within Part 2 was made with Andrew Stevens, the star, directing.
Right. Yeah,
and
I knew that.
And
I'm
going to incorporate that into the same guilty pleasure because that's fun as well.
May as well.
It doesn't have George Kennedy, but hey, you know.
Was he still alive? I guess he
was. Yeah, at that point in time. 89. I'm trying to think because
I can't remember many movies he was
making
in the late
80s. I'm going to bring this right back to a common thread that's on our podcast. George Kennedy around that time was in Radioactive Dreams, the Albert Pune film.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
And this is a similar film to that as well.
Right.
He was sort of, he did the Delta Force, I think.
So
he was doing these low-budget genre films at the time, which was quite interesting.
Well, he did a lot in the early 80s, like Just Before Dawn and Death Ship and,
he
was in a shit ton of these of genre flicks.
Awesome. You know? So
considering
anyway,
he was a respectable actor at one point.
He was a very respectable actor. Yeah,
absolutely.
Naked Gun.
We've all got to make money somehow. Vincent Gallo's selling his dick for $1 million.
Oh, man. Well, before when you were choking, it sounded like you'd had some.
Sorry, that was his tuxedo. I inhaled too hard. I think I tasted some Chloe Savini. But no, that's cool, man. Yeah, I've been wanting to revisit that. I think it's in my Netflix queue.
There's a double pack on DVD.
Like Shout Factory or something.
Look, if it's on, it wasn't. But if it's on Netflix, go for it. But
I'll do it.
Found the double pack on DVD cheap, and it was worth getting. I think it's just regular full frame.
Yeah,
but who cares?
As to be expected.
Who cares? Yeah. But anyway, that's the guilty pleasures for this episode. Did you want to throw another voice in the mix?
No, I better not. I want to save my throat for the rest of the show, or for Vincent Gallo if he drops by.
That's what I'm going to do to you now. Tear the skin from your body.
Can you believe we're almost at the end of another episode?
Oh, I find it hard to believe. Would you believe my shoe is a phone? Would you believe Vincent Gallo will fuck someone for $1 million? I'm still in disbelief. I really am. But yeah, I think more celebrities need to add that to say they're Kickstarters. That's a Kickstarter package.
That is.
You want this film to get made?
Reward.
You know, like old mate Mark Ryan? Is that his name? The chap that was in A Nightmare on Elm Street 2. Mark Patton.
Disgrace.
No, I'm not going to make any nasty remarks, but you know.
I'll go for it.
No, but he just got his doco funded, yep. Scream Queen, My Nightmare on Elm Street or whatever. Yep. But that's going to be funded. I'm quite keen to see, you know, how that sort of shapes up.
And did he get
up
to fuck him?
No, well, he didn't put that out there. I think he made his, I think it's about $40,000 that they needed to make, you know, to get the picture rolling. But the one I really want to plug, because I don't think there's long to go, is that Empire Pictures doco.
Yeah.
Celluloid Wizards and whatever it's called.
Yep.
That fucking doco needs to be made.
Sure does.
I know, they've shot a lot of interviews, but the money's pretty much going to licensing the clips and tidying the packages. Great incentives
there as
well.
So get behind it.
Yeah, totally. Like, this is our thing, and no one was liking the post. I'm like, what are you happening, people? Empire Pictures.
Yeah.
Come on, let's get aboard. Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Cool. So, yeah, that's. I reckon, you know, maybe they could get Tim Matheson or Klaus... Is Klaus Kinski? Is he still alive?
No.
No, he's gone there.
He's gone.
Well, Natasha Kinski.
He's gone to that great crawl space in the sky.
He's been taken up to the crawl space. Actually, that's one I have to pick up on Blu-ray.
That's a short film.
But I digress. Yeah, it is.
It's like 65 minutes long.
Yeah, but it's probably got like 10 minutes of rolling credits at the end, no?
Yeah, something like that.
Pad it out.
So
typical
what
Empire.
I want to ask you before we wrap this up, you know, being Halloween and all, what are you watching this Halloween?
Well, I plugged it on the Fake Shemp Facebook. I'm going to go and check out Paranormal Activity, The Ghost Dimension, the fifth chapter in the franchise, or six if you include the spin-off movie, the marked ones,
yep.
Correct. And then the one I'm super excited about, Scout's Guide to Zombie Apocalypse, which I'm really hanging to see.
Sounded like you were gargling some of Vincent Gallo.
Thank you, Vincent. Now, moving on. Yeah, so no, that's every year, without fail, we always do John Carpenter's Halloween.
Yep.
I could do it any day of the year, but as long as I watch it at minimum once a year. So that will be getting watched tomorrow before
Very
we head
cool.
out to the movies. What about yourself, sir?
Yeah, I've got three lined up, whether I get through them all is another
Spooky
thing.
Town?
No, but that maybe that's on my eBay basket.
Oh, right. No, Ghost Town, the other one? Which one? Oh, well, it goes by both names.
we're not having this
Funnily
discussion.
Enough, Charles Band.
All right, so I'm thinking of Flatliners.
Oh, cool. I watched that not long ago. That was a lot of fun.
Possibly Something Wicked This Way Comes.
Yeah, cool. That's Disney one.
I love kid-oriented totally. Halloween films.
Yeah.
And there's a movie called Husk. I don't know if you've seen it. It's a Scarecrow film from the After Dark collection.
Yeah, I've never seen it. I've seen the artwork.
Great film.
Yeah,
really cool atmosphere. That, to me, represents Halloween very well because it's very... got that atmosphere. It's really comical
sense.
And dark and totally. Violent and whatnot. But, let's wrap this fucker up.
Totally.
We want to thank Daniel McDonald, sound design, of course. He's
thank
always
you, Daniel.
He layers our stuff so well.
So richly. Thank you, Daniel.
And let's pause for a second while I turn it up a little bit. Do you like that?
Yeah, it's good. Can you feel the bass? I feel like Howard Stern with that lady in Private Parts where she's sitting on the speaker.
There you go. I'll bring it back down.
Okay. Did you like that? Your mother, she's underneath the desk swallowing my microphone right now.
Cool. Well, that's it for another episode. Hopefully, we'll have Sean with us next time.
Yes.
Also, stay tuned because What the Fuck Was That is coming back.
Oh, cool.
I'm going to make that a weekly thing as opposed to every day.
That's understandable. We'll do that.
I wanted to get it out every day just to set the pace.
Yeah.
Like, get the content out there. But I think I've got more things to do and I'll
that's understandable.
Do that weekly.
That's understandable.
So that's coming back and... That's about it from us.
Sweet.
So we'll see you next time. Thanks, man.
Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Vincent.
Ciao.